Welcome to You've Got Time, an Orange is a New Black podcast. I'm Erin Quayle, and I'm so very glad you're here. For those of you who have completed your entire Orange is a New Black binge already, that's definitely me, you know that this season is full of topical and relevant issues that most definitely deserve a lively discussion. We can't wait to take a deep dive into each episode with experts in the field of social justice, mental health, and substance abuse in order to open up a discussion on a whole host of incredibly important topics that Jenji Cohen and the Orange is the New Black team have so masterfully laid out this season. So for the first episode, I asked my old colleague and friend, Ed Green, onto the podcast with me. For 5 years, Ed and I ran an intensive outpatient group for clients in substance abuse treatment. Intensive outpatient, or IOP, is basically the step between inpatient treatment and once-a-week outpatient treatment. Ed is one of the most gifted clinicians I know, and in addition to running IOP with me, he's worked as a juvenile probation officer for almost a decade with a focus on working with teens involved in gang activity. Yeah, this guy is the real deal. Ed and I saw hundreds of clients during our time as a counseling team, and as you'll see, we have a shared outlook about treatment, care, and how the system works. Since the premiere of Orange is the New Black Season 4 was kind of a catch-all, we discussed an overview of the first episode along with how we felt about various characters and the changing status quo at Litchfield. We also spoke about a few online articles that I promised to link to on our website page. So if you've accessed this podcast through iTunes or Stitcher, you can find the webpage at You've Got Time Podcast, or we have it up on hiddenremote.com as well. So I will warn you that there are very few mild spoilers about episode 2 of the show here. So if you haven't binged it all on a feverish haze like I did, just be wary of those. Other than that, please just enjoy. This is the very first episode, so I definitely welcome feedback, questions, comments, concerns, basically anything. What I'm saying is that I want to hear from you. So you can contact us at You've Got Time Pod on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/You've Got Time Podcast, or contact us directly at You've Got Time Podcast@gmail.com. In addition, you can keep an eye out on hiddenremote.com, that's like when you lose your remote in the couch cushions, for all of our original Orange is a New Black content. Thanks for listening! I guess we can just jump right in and talk about the first episode. And we were just talking about how the first episode doesn't really get super deep, and it's actually kind of really funny.
I agree.
Yeah, and a lot of the plot lines that were left hanging from last season start to kick in. You know, the inmates come back, we find out that Alex lives, and the new inmates get assignments. So what would you say, like, your general thoughts on the episode are?
General thoughts? You know, I'm hooked. First and foremost, my wife actually talked me into watching it along with you. Mm-hmm. And from there,
and I have to get her on the podcast.
Definitely. From there, I just, you know, I haven't been able to stop watching, but it's exciting. It looks like it's going to be a real interesting series this year. And I'm just, you know, I just, they've left a lot of kind of untied stories as it relates to each individual inmate, so I'm just excited to see what happens, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of setup, and you know, for the first episode, we're not necessarily going to get too deep into any of the mental health, substance abuse, criminal justice ideas, because it's kind of laying a framework for the rest of the season. But one of the things that I definitely wanted to talk about was that all of the experienced guards walked out, and I kind of feel for them, because I know you and I have talked about it's hard to do a job like that and not get compensated appropriately. And so, you know, those jobs are so important, and I just feel like more people should get paid, you know, a wage that's appropriate for those.
I agree 100%. In addition, not only were they not being paid appropriately, but just from the past shows along with this first episode, you know, it just appears as though they felt like they just weren't appreciated.
I never thought about that
at all. And you know, I mean, everyone has a breaking point, so it appeared mm-hmm. as though they at that point, along with, you know, obviously they have families to feed and bills to pay. So that was extremely frustrating for him.
Mm-hmm. And that's so true, because I remember in last season they were talking about one of the guards. I don't remember her name, but she was saying, you know, I know when Suzanne or Crazy Eyes is going crazy, and I know when she's just, you know, or when she's having an episode. I know everyone's name. I know their everything. Right. And the new guards didn't really know or care when they first came in. So valuing people like that is really important.
I agree. And the guards, you know, they built a really good rapport mm-hmm. with the inmates. You know, we joke about it at times, but oftentimes they're spending more time at work with the inmates than mm-hmm. they do their actual families. And you know, those bonds, as much as you have a job to do and you have to draw that line, I mean, we're human beings. We have feelings. Mm-hmm. So you're going to bond with different folks. And you know, I noticed that as well. I think that guard might have been one of the only ones that was able to kind of talk Crazy Eyes down when she was, mm-hmm. you know, at her breaking point.
Yeah. And the guards this year, you know, the new guards that kind of are a little scary right now, they don't really treat the inmates like prisoners. They treat them more like they're just their job. And that's a hard thing. I think it's definitely a hard thing to do. It makes your job harder in a way, I think, when you don't treat people like people.
I would agree. As beings, you know, none of us like to really be told what to do. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get resistance when you have that like militant style, you know, the rule with an iron fist type mm-hmm. of mindset. And yeah, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, a few of them are straight from the military. They had reference mm-hmm. to, right, I believe, recruiting some.
I think so. Yeah, that might have been in the second. It doesn't matter. Sorry. No, it doesn't matter. But eventually, yeah, they do. Spoiler alert, but okay.
Sorry about that. Definitely the head guard, though.
Yeah, you know? No, he's insane. He's huge.
He definitely is. He's huge. He's a monster.
Guy. And he's already kind of clashing with... I mean, everyone kind of seems to clash with Red, but he's already kind of clashing with Red, which is definitely building up to something bigger. I when I first watched the episode, though, I definitely have to admit, even though he was, like, a difficult guy, I felt like there was something more. Like, I don't know. There was something, maybe, like, a softness to him. I don't know why I thought that. And I've seen what happens with him kind of later on down the line, but how do you, like, way later down on the line, but how do you feel?
Spoiler alert. No, I'm joking. I agree. I mean, there were a few instances where it appeared as though he wanted to be a little more compassionate or show mm-hmm. some feeling, and he would catch himself. You know, it looked like mm-hmm. he wanted to just keep that front up, mm-hmm. That shell. Mm-hmm. So it will be interesting to see what happens with him as well.
Yeah, and he, you know, and he's answering to Joe Caputo, who's the warden. And I kind of thought, you know, we've seen Joe over the years, you know, he's evolving as well, and now he's the warden, and he's like this big position. And I kind of feel like if he was my administrator, having a couple different bosses throughout the years,
right,
that I would kind of like to be able to go to him. Like, he would be someone that I could talk to, which makes me feel positive that he's in that position, because a lot of times people in those positions are, you know, we didn't see the warden for a long time on Orange is the New Black right. because he just didn't care, and Joe actually cares.
Yeah, he's definitely hands-on and does care. Mm-hmm. Only concern I had was it appeared as though his new position, for at least a moment there, was starting to kind of get to his head, because mm-hmm. he had that pact and the agreement with the guards, and you know, once he found out that he was kind of running the show. Remember initially, I think he was the one that kind of spearheaded them asking or striking and when demanding that they get certain kickbacks.
Oh, right. That's true.
And then he, you know, mm-hmm. pretty much came back from the meeting after finding out that he was the warden, and mm-hmm. was like, what can you do? You know, get in line.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that he gets back to the old gentleman that he was. But it's a little sketchy. I'm not sure whether or not he's going to really let that warden title go to his head or not.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's harder, I feel like, once you get higher and higher in administration, and I think that's what Natalie Figueroa, the crazy lady in the last couple seasons, right. who was embezzling all the money, she was trying to tell him that all along. It's harder when you get further up the chain when you're in a counseling position. Like, that's why I never wanted to really be a supervisor, because I always wanted to have hands-on with clients.
I agree. And, you know, mm-hmm. the politics, like you said, they definitely do get thicker. Mm-hmm. Even in my field, I don't know if I'm able to talk about it at all.
Yeah.
But I am a juvenile probation officer for the state of Connecticut. Won't say exactly where, but you know, that was one of the deterrents and the reasons why I chose not to you know, become a supervisor either, or actually interview for it, was due to the fact that your caseload is then the probation officers. You no longer, as you said, work hands-on with the kids, and I really love being in the trenches as well.
Yeah.
But it does appear, though, because you, like, as you said, we didn't see the warden in all the other episodes, and as it gets Caputo, is that how you pronounce it? He's in the mix. You know, he's down on the grounds. I even noticed one time he tried to, he looked out, I believe, for one or two of the inmates when that big guard was looking like he was going to really, like, you know, come down on them, and he basically just was, you know, he was trying to cover for him, so he seems like a real
person. But then when Red asked him to help, he was just kind of like, okay,
yeah, hands off. He did, he left
Red. Because everyone doesn't really want to deal with Red. Everyone just kind of wants to leave her.
Well, she's dangerous. I don't know. You know, I'd be afraid to eat or drink anything that Red made me if I crossed her or rubbed her the wrong way.
I think that's her style. That's how she rolls. Well, so kind of to switch gears a little bit to Piper, who's, you know, friends with Red, and she's kind of just doing her own thing during this whole thing. When I kind of saw it for the first time, I wrote down Piper, ugh, because she's kind of moving to the side a little bit this season because there's all these new faces and all these new problems. But she's also, unlike Red, she's also being kind of delusional about the way that she's using her power.
I believe so. I agree.
Yeah, and she's you know, people in real power don't usually have to go around telling people about it.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
I agree. And, I knew you had mentioned how she and Red have become pretty close. They're actually cellmates now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe they always were, correct?
They weren't always. I think last season they got to be cellmates. I think. Or maybe season. I don't remember what season.
Well, and, you know, Piper, you're correct. She's trying to, like, really put on that role, or, you know, have that whole persona of being the toughest female in the prison. Mm-hmm. And as we know, there are pecking orders in you know, prisons. And in actuality, she definitely is not. So, I find it a bit amusing. But it appears as though, you know, there are some young ladies that are possibly looking to test her down the line. I don't know. You know, it's concerning, especially with all these new women coming in, because I saw that they were kind of casing her out, and they had inquired about who kind of runs the show in the prison. You know, and you
she
know,
said what she said, like something like the reader over there is the one who's in charge.
When she looks like the you know, daintiest little thing. But, you know, they will test, so it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with that.
Especially since she doesn't really seem to have, I mean, she's got a plan, but she's not, I don't know. She's just kind of talking about her power instead of really doing something about it.
And from what I've been told, you know, in the prisons oftentimes, as much as you would think there's no real cash or money, there is, along with commissary. And a lot of, you know, the more cash or commissary you have, the more power oftentimes you will have, as far as control and being able to kind of have folks do things for you. And I do know that, remember, the young lady stole all her money, the woman that she was dealing with. So she's kind of starting from the bottom again.
Right, and that's why she sent her down the hill.
Right, definitely. Which was pretty treacherous on her part.
That was, yeah. And kind of makes her a mark, right? Doesn't it? Because if she could do that to her, she could do it to anyone.
Yeah, I was surprised that they didn't view her more as a snitch, quote unquote. And, you know, they often, snitches get stitches, that old cliche. But I was surprised they didn't mark her more as a snitch than, you know, being someone that they need to be careful from or of, because she's a bad, you know. She's a bad one.
She's come a long way since, like, you know, chewing the peppers in season one.
Definitely.
But I'm definitely kind of glad she's moving off. I always thought, you know, if Piper was walked into, like, our IOP offices, I would not. She wouldn't be a client that I would want to treat.
Right.
She would be a very difficult client to treat, I think, because she would definitely just lie to get what she wanted, and she wouldn't necessarily be super open. And I'm, you know, definitely one of my less favorite clients or people on the show.
Right, I agree. And, you know, IOP, you're referencing to that, I think the clients in there would have eaten her up. You know, they would have saw right through that. You know, I believe they would have been, she would have been pretty transparent to them, and wouldn't have done well if she kind of didn't kind of, you know, become a little more humble.
Yeah, she probably would have been one of those clients who just sat and said, I'm not getting anything out of this,
right.
And why am I here? And but maybe she would have blossomed. I don't know. Not sure.
Well, but, you know, we were good at not giving up on anyone and trying to give them the benefit of the doubt.
That's true.
And there'd be times when it would be someone who we didn't think was going to make it, or who we thought was going to kind of rub us the wrong way the entire time, that would become the most successful and do the best and really get a lot out of it.
Yeah. But that's because, you know, we, unlike a lot of the people on the show, I won't talk to, like, counselors in general, but we... Right, we never gave up on anyone, and we always had hope for them, because every person, and I think I said this, I had a mission statement up about this podcast, and I said, everyone has the opportunity to succeed. It's just within you and what you choose to do with it. But a lot of people on the show, I think Healy included, who's one of the counselors that we've seen a lot since the beginning, don't necessarily believe that. They don't necessarily believe that these people can succeed, and that's like the component that you need in order to have a healthy therapeutic relationship with someone.
I agree. Not only succeed, but, you know, change. You know, a lot of times folks don't have that mindset that people can change, and I'm a firm believer that they can. You know, it obviously takes a made-up mind and at times a support network that can help you get through certain things, but I think that's key. And in addition, you know, I was really big on also holding them accountable. So, you know, kind of calling them on their stuff, or allowing, you know, their fellow inmates for the Orange is the New Black, or ILP members for, you know, in the treatment for them, but to just really call them on it and challenge folks to kind of do what it is they need to do in addition to trying to find what motivates them to want to change.
That's true. And no one's really doing that on Orange is the New Black.
No, I'm not seeing that at all.
Birdie, the counselor last season, did it, but Healy was trying to take her down because she had all these relationships with the clients that he was jealous of.
Right.
But he wasn't trying to foster that in them at all, which is just sad. And I think Birdie kind of believed that people could change, but she was also really, at some point, she was judgmental of like crazy eyes when she came to her with the story.
Right.
And then she was like, you can't write this, and even though it was really helping her.
It was.
So a lot of times it's hard as counselors to take a step back and look and see what's benefiting the person that's in front of you asking for help instead of what your values are.
I agree. And kind of meeting them where they are.
Right.
Versus sitting
up on our
pedestal.
And that was a big part of our treatment.
You're right.
Meeting clients where they are instead of, you know, forcing them to be where you want, or putting expectations on them to where you feel like they want to be.
I agree. My other concern is with, you know, the jail now being dealt with, or it's privatized, you know. It's no longer a ward of the state, so to speak. You know, that is going to be very interesting in the episodes to come, just due to the fact that, you know, the overcrowding now. We see all these young ladies that have come in, and it just appeared as though they're viewed more as just a dollar sign or like livestock, so to speak, versus actual human beings. And I haven't seen a lot of treatment. I know in the past episodes you would see them in different, you know, rooms going through different treatment, whether it be for, you know, substance abuse or mental health or whatever it may be, and I haven't seen that yet, but it's just the first episode. So
yeah, even with AA, they had AA sprinkled throughout. I'm, as a, you know, primarily a substance abuse counselor, I noticed that there was no substance abuse treatment for any of these clients except for AA, which works for some people, but it's not necessarily something that everyone you know, benefits from.
Right.
I mean, people in jail maybe benefit from the togetherness of it, but and the structure of it, but not necessarily the message behind it.
Right.
And that was the only thing being offered to them, and people need a lot of different options in order to get better and improve.
I agree.
And that was not something, and you're right, this, I mean, first episode, they're kind of shuffling around, but, you know, in the remainder of the season, there's not really much of that, because they're focusing more on the overcrowding, and when you have so many people, your resources are limited. And if you're not willing to pay for things, for therapists or guards or, you know, quality, anything, then the quality of the inmates or the people that are under your care suffer.
Right. Which can, you know, heavily affect the recidivism rate.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, without rehabilitation, I firmly believe that that revolving door kind of continues to just revolve, unfortunately.
Yeah, and then people start to resent the system or learn how to game the system, or, you know, they don't trust it anymore.
Right.
So why would they trust a counselor that they come upon that's actually a trust? You know, that's a problem that you and I face. I mean, you probably even face in juvenile probation with kids who have been in their system their whole lives.
Definitely.
They don't trust you, and you have to build up that rapport with them, and that's tough.
You do. You definitely do. A lot, and oftentimes, you know, they come from either broken homes or, you know, have had many relationships throughout their lives where they were mistreated or the trust mm-hmm. was broken. So it's really difficult. You're correct for mm-hmm. them to.
Or there was a line that Tasty had in the first episode where Suzanne comes back and she's like, "I ate lead," and Tasty's like, "That's probably why half of us are in here."
I know,
and that's the thing, you know, in poorer communities, people do have, you know, apartments or homes that haven't been treated for lead, and they get exposed to a small, very small amount of lead, and that can really alter the way that your brain works.
Definitely.
And I just thought, it was funny, but it was definitely also had a grain of truth to it. No, too.
It definitely does. Another thing that I do find oftentimes, especially in some of the inner city communities, is folks' resistance to medication for mental mm-hmm. health. Mm-hmm. You know, they have that mindset that there's nothing wrong with you, or you know, the medication is just going to make the child or the adult worse. Or they're going to become addicted to that, or that they're not crazy, and you know, that just that resistance alone oftentimes allows some of the mental health issues to never be addressed, and then they mm-hmm. spill off into, you know, other venues, mm-hmm. which in turn oftentimes will get them in trouble with the law mm-hmm. and brings them back into the prison system,
right.
Similar to the Orange is the New Black.
And instead of, you know, medicating themselves with mental health medications, I know you and I have millions of times, not millions, but, you know, dozens if not hundreds of times told clients, you know, would you rather, you know, be taking PCP or would you rather be on a mental health medication
right.
that helps you and that's being monitored by a doctor and doesn't get you in trouble with the law? And you know, a lot of times people just, like you said, people don't like to be told what to do.
Right.
And they want to kind of take things into their own hands and do things that make them feel better on their own merit. Because they don't have, you know, someone like you that they can trust in the system.
Right. And then they choose to just self-medicate, you know, mm-hmm. by using those street drugs or alcohol or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And not ever really addressing or getting to the root of some of the reasons why they want to numb and not
mm-hmm.
feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that's extremely important.
And even more intelligent people like Poussey on the show. She's you know which one that she's like the bald tiny
I do.
One.
Yes.
And she drinks a lot. And like before this whole season aired, I wrote a thing on seven of the characters on the show that need therapy, not to be in jail.
Wow.
And she was always using the hooch to kind of escape from the world because she didn't really feel like she had a connection with anyone. And so she didn't really feel like she had that trust with, I mean, she did, she had her friends, but she didn't really have a love. And she kind of was always escaping into internal things instead of, you know, letting the looking for external things like substances to solve her problems instead of trying to look internally and try to work on herself, which is a hard thing to do when there's a substance that's going to solve your problem or make you feel better in like a couple seconds, or you have to like actually work at something. There's a big difference.
I agree. And she was extremely intelligent.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, I believe she was a military child,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken.
Spoke three languages.
And spoke numerous languages and was, you know, very articulate. And
mm-hmm.
she just, like you said, didn't feel like she had anyone to really relate to what she was going through.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't recall why she was actually in prison, though. Do you know?
Marijuana possession.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, which is a whole nother thing.
Definitely.
Because a lot of, you know, that's definitely something that's becoming decriminalized and is taking the pressure off of our system, at least a little bit. I know in Connecticut, where we are right now, they just decriminalized it, and I don't know if they released anyone that had,
I'm not 100% sure,
because I know some states they released some people that, you know,
were in
the
for
laws
that.
Had, you know, expired, or they changed the law, so they released the people under that law, because, you know, the system, there's so much strain. And we were talking about before with the courts and the, you know, the backup in the courts and the backup with the treatment centers and the backup
Definitely.
With all of that, you know, some people don't necessarily need to be in there. But yeah, but that was, you know, definitely a minor charge for her to be to be in prison. And
she's been in for a while,
mm-hmm.
it appears.
And right? have to deal with, yeah, I think it was 2 years. There was an article online that went through all of the different ladies' sentences and how
oh, wow.
long they were in and why they were in. And I can attach that on the website when we're done. But,
that would be great. I'd love to see that as well.
Yeah. And some of them, you know, you don't know or you don't exactly know, but it was just all the ones that they had said on the show.
Wow.
Because, you know, obviously we know Pipers and different ones. But yeah, and then in kind of talking about treatment with, I'm just trying to think of how many clients we've ever seen in like direct treatment with someone on the show, and it's not because Healy's the only. I feel like there's supposed to be other counselors on the show, but Healy's the only one we see.
Right.
Except for Birdie, we did see Birdie, but maybe they're really the only two counselors on the show, and we've never really seen any other inmates in like counseling. Well, Brooke, the small Asian right. girl last year, she got into trouble because of Healy.
She did. You're correct.
Yeah, and he's not really the best. He's not really the best counselor.
And she ended up telling him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did. I kind of forgot about that.
And he appeared to just brush it off. You mm-hmm. know, she said she's, you know, more depressed and has thoughts, I believe, of wanting to harm herself even the more after mm-hmm. she has a session with him,
mm-hmm.
which speaks volumes as it mm-hmm. relates to, you know, what it is he was bringing to the table. It's mm-hmm. unfortunate.
And he's definitely someone who needs some counseling himself.
I agree.
He's 100%. He's a damaged man. That has some power issues and some rage issues and all things like that, just kind of like some of the guards do on the right. show as well, which doesn't make for people that, you know, the inmates feel that they can go to, which is right. what you said and speaks to the whole recidivism thing as well, because, you know, obviously if there's nowhere for them to grow in the prison, they're when they get out, they're not going to have anything.
Right.
Like Tasty had in, I think, season one. She got out and then she came right back.
That's
and
correct.
There's no support system for people.
I usually use the analogy of like having them, you know, just getting them out of society for a period of time and not having much rehabilitation or providing them with the life skills that they would need to kind of change and break that cycle of recidivism. It's basically just like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may stop the bleeding for a short period of time, but in actuality, mm-hmm. you know, that Band-Aid's not going to fix that wound, yeah. you know, and it is very similar. You know, mm-hmm. I am a firm believer in the fact that rehabilitation and treatment is a huge, huge benefit for folks who are going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm definitely, as the podcast goes on, I've, you know, I want to look into why that's not happening. I mean, obviously it's not happening because we don't have the money, but, you know, why that's not happening for more people, or why there aren't more, you know, pilot programs in place. Maybe there are, maybe I'll find out about them, to help people readjust to society. Because I know, you know, with us, we have access, you know, as counselors, we know certain places that we can give people access to housing or, you know, start the paperwork. Obviously, it's a long process, but kind of start the process for housing or employment or a lot of different things.
Different benefits, right?
We, you know, by the virtue of being felons, a lot of women on Orange Is New Black, they don't have access to a lot of those things, like, you know, state assistant housing or certain jobs where they can't get a certain job once they get out of jail, so they go back to selling drugs, or they go back to doing illegal things, or they go back to jail.
You're right.
And it's just a tough thing. But with the juvenile programs, because sometimes they're long programs, right? They're
some of the what treatment programs?
The inpatient treatment programs?
Yes, they do. They've got a number, but you just referenced to cutbacks. The one that we had an inpatient treatment facility that was 60 days, which is substantially
for a young person,
yeah. And then they would transition out to IOP. There are also residentials where kids can go up to 18 months for various, you know, mental health
that's a long time
issues, things of that nature, depending, you know. Mm-hmm. They always usually try in the juvenile system, though, to exhaust the most, like, the least restrictive treatment programs first. So obviously, right. at home, you know, maybe an intensive in-home service, a program that the child will actually go to. But there are, you know, they do have a number of different inpatient facilities, but they're the one that was 60 days, which is the longest, actually just lost their funding. So they're, July 1st is going to be their last day. And we're finding that a lot in Connecticut. Not only are a lot of the employees being laid off, but a lot of they've cut so much funding that the programs are going to be, you know, pretty much slim to none. Mm-hmm. I have seen, though, in Connecticut how they are trying the second, they're calling it, I believe, the Second Chance Initiative, where they're really trying to pass the bill to where they, if you are a convicted felon, then you do not have to disclose that fact at your initial, on your application. You know, you would in the interview, but by then, their mindset is you've kind of gotten your foot in the door and you're able to kind of hopefully show folks and explain and express to them how much you've changed.
Is that the one, if it's a nonviolent felony,
that's correct.
Right? Okay. Yeah, because that's another thing about Orange is the New Black is many of the women are in there for nonviolent crimes for long periods of time where they don't, you know, and they come out and they have to put felony. Everyone's kind of just a blanket felon when they come out. You know, you have to put felony on. And of course, when an employer has a stack of applications, they're going to weed out the ones that say felon on them.
I know also just briefly, one of the major cities, actually Bridgeport, I read something not too long ago where they've been able to get some funding and they're also trying to tap into some federal funding and have partnered up with a lot of the businesses in that city where they're agreeing to hire convicted felons for, I believe it's 2 to 3 months. The actual, the grant will pay the felons. So the companies pretty much are able to have some free labor for a few months, which is kind of an incentive with the promise that if things work out, then they will then in turn hire those inmates.
That's
not
great.
Inmates, I'm sorry, convicted felons.
Second chance program?
Initiative. I believe.
That's great.
If I'm not mistaken.
That's really good.
So they can get their foot in the door at least and from there hopefully show and prove.
And hopefully they don't get fired.
But I think there's going to be some stipulations as to how that works out.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
just so that they don't get the free labor and then let them all go. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's good to hear that some programs are thriving or that are starting up that are able to help people kind of get a foot, you know, foot in the door at least.
That's correct.
Because when you mentioned losing funding, I was like, oh, we lost funding when we were, even though, you know, and not to toot our own horn, but we were a great IOP, you know, program. We had a lot of clients. We had clients come back to us that, you know, would relapse and they weren't even back in the system. And they'd say, Ed and Aaron, we need to come back because we feel like we need to get back on, you know, into our sobriety.
That's
before
correct.
Anything horrible happens. And I don't really, you know, working in other places, I don't really feel like that happens too often,
right,
where people come back before they feel like they're about to get into trouble. But we lost our funding because we were dramatically undercut in terms of funding by a different program that will remain unnamed, that didn't necessarily provide the same amount of treatment that we did. They had wait lists. They, you know, shuffled people in and out. The groups were gigantic, and it wasn't a positive experience. Kind of like, I mean, on a very smaller scale, it's kind of what's happening on Orange is the New Black, where people are getting crowded into something where there's no care to it.
Right. That agency definitely, I personally believe, spread themselves too thin. Mm-hmm. They didn't even have two clinician teams any longer.
Mm-hmm.
They had one clinician running anywhere from 10 to 15 mm-hmm. clients. And I just think the quality of service, you know, is tarnished at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. And to have one or two counselors for, I guess, at one point, I think they say there's like 200-something women, but then there's an extra 100 that are coming into the prison. So one counselor for 300-something women, that's
right.
Not at all. I mean, my highest caseload ever was 90, and that was just, it was just constant crisis management. You can't have, not an IOP, but in a methadone clinic.
You're just putting fires out.
You're just putting, constantly, someone lost their housing, or someone, you know, relapsed and is in jail, or someone, you know, you're never, and I'm sure it's the same in prison, too, where people are, I mean, and, you know, on Orange is the New Black, we have Crazy Eyes, and now we have, I think it's Maureen was her girlfriend, but, and
I
obviously
believe so.
They have mental health issues, but in a real prison, the majority of people have severe mental, I mean, not severe, but the majority of people have some sort of mental health issue, and we don't necessarily see that as much on Orange is the New Black as in real life.
But what I've found in real life, oftentimes the quick fix in prisons for that are to either keep them like highly, highly mm-hmm. medicated to the point where they're like practically sedated at all times,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the solitary confinement.
Right.
Just kind of keeping them in a single cell, which mm-hmm. in turn for someone who may be suffering from some a mental health, you know, illness, that's going to just intensify it,
mm-hmm.
you know? Any person, for that matter, just being locked in a cell, we're not animals. So
mm-hmm.
that, without any real, you know, communication with the outside world or with other peers, that can really make you go stir crazy.
Yeah, even Piper, I think in the second season, she was in there for a month and she just didn't, she like lost, she was like painting stuff on the walls with her food. And,
yeah, it's tough.
You know, I would lose it. I'm home alone for a day and I'm I want to get out. I can't.
Need to see, talk to someone, anything.
Yeah, just reach out and talk to another person.
Right.
And I'm not sure if we get it in the first episode. I think in the second episode, they ask where Sophia Brissett is, and she's right. in the shoe for no reason whatsoever because they have no other way to deal with the fact that she's in, you know, in trouble, and there's, she's like, her being around is a risk to her own safety,
right.
and there's no way to deal with that because there's no infrastructure and there's no money to kind of have a plan in place or to train officers appropriately,
right, on how to deal with that type of population, right? mm-hmm. in the prison system.
Yeah,
that's no joke.
Which is, it's definitely not, and that's, you know, happening more and more as well. And in addition to the mental health issues too, and we kind of, you know, switching gears a little bit to Crazy Eyes and talking about her. She's
I love Crazy Eyes.
Yes,
that's my
she's
hero.
So like, it's hard not to feel for her because she wants so badly to kind of be part of the, you know, part of everything that's going on. But at the same time, she's, you know, she's limited in some ways,
right.
and it's hard for her. And a lot of times, her emotions are out of her control, and it's just, it's tough. But she's out in the woods with Maureen, and she realizes that Maureen is kind of off her rocker too,
a little more than her,
a little more than her, a little more unstable, right. and she decides to come back to the prison. And you know, we were talking before about how that moment where she kind of smushed her face up to the prison fence and wanted to get back in, it's kind of just so funny and so tragic at the same time because prison's home to her,
right?
She's clearly been there for a really long time, and that's what she knows. And it's hard because she's not getting any support in there except for from her friends,
right.
and thank goodness she met them because they're therapists.
Definitely. And, you know, talk about being or becoming institutionalized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a prime example of it. I've actually met folks where they feel safer in prison.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they're guaranteed, even though it may be, you know, horrible and nothing that we would ever even think of eating. They know they're going to have at least 3 meals a day. They know they're going to mm-hmm. be warm, you know, that they'll have a bed and their shower and some of the, you know, the basic necessities that I think oftentimes we take for granted,
mm-hmm.
You know, once you become institutionalized, it's that's a little scary, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was disheartening for her to say, I just want to come home.
Yeah.
And I never really have remember her ever referencing to getting out and what life would look like
mm-hmm.
then, because I don't believe she has anyone.
Right. Well, she's got her parents, right?
Oh,
they came to visit
that's
her
correct.
A while, like, because they're old. They're old now.
That's
though,
right.
So they're older.
I'm sorry. That is correct.
But you know, she probably, you know, she's in routine. That's what she lives every day. And she says, I think, like you said, in terms of the food situation, she's like, well, dinner's at 4:45 or whatever time. We have to get back because dinner.
And Crazy Eyes is there. She's eating.
And she's, yeah, she's there. She's on time for all of that
she
because
is.
That's what she knows. She knows the structure. And, you know, maybe that is helpful for her in
right.
some ways. But, you know, the fact that she's not really getting any help for her condition and no one's really understanding her except for her friends is tough.
Right,
and
agree.
She's definitely been, I would say she's probably definitely been the poster child for Orange is the New Black because she's someone that we don't necessarily encounter every day. She's, you know, because those types, you know, people with those disabilities are in programs or they're
right.
you know, they're not necessarily out and about, but she's someone that everyone, you know, loves to love.
They sure do.
Mm-hmm.
I was even, you know, not to switch gears, but last year I believe when they had the awards,
mm-hmm.
to see her outside of that character.
Yes. she's so
you know,
pretty.
She's a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I mean, she plays that part
mm-hmm.
I believe like no other. You know,
mm-hmm.
she is great at what she does and really shows, you know, a different side of the whole mental health, you know, facet and how that oftentimes plays a big part if it's not addressed on people's actions and where they can end up,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, and she's, you know, she's hard, difficult too. You know, I feel like people have liked her the whole time, but she did really hurt Poussey in season 2. She beat her up in the shower.
She sure did.
Because V told her to. I guess maybe we kind of blame that one on V.
Well, remember she was stalking Piper as well.
And she was stalking Piper, but that was just because she just like was too enthusiastic.
Yeah, that freaked me out a little bit.
But it freaks Piper out too, and it's just, you know, her enthusiasm, she
right.
doesn't know how to rein it in, and she's not being... You know, there's no one there to help
right.
guide her.
And she really doesn't have a filter.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. And that's just, you know, it's a hard thing to watch. But yeah, the situation with Maureen, I want to know more about Maureen because at one point I think Caputo opens up her file and he's like, oh, and he's surprised about what he sees
right.
in there. And she's like, I like to be shocking or something like that. So
and then they didn't disclose it.
And then no. they didn't disclose it. And I was like, I want to know more about what's going on with her.
You and I both.
Hopefully get a flashback episode at some point in time. But kind of with on the other side of mental health, we did kind of get a new person last year, Lolly, who suffers from paranoid schizophrenia. And in this episode, she actually saves Alex, which is great.
Right.
And actually, that was definitely the funniest. That was my favorite moment of the whole thing, where she's taking pictures of her with a cell phone.
Right.
And she's like loving the emojis.
Yes.
And she's just, but my thing was that she was just kind of so blasé about the whole thing. She killed the guy and she was kind of like, oh, let's go. Everyone's going to the lake. Like, let's, you know. So, you know, it definitely kind of shows how different mental health disorders can affect people differently.
Definitely. And you remember, I remember when Alex initially thought that she may have mm-hmm. been the hitman was going to come and you know, assassinate her for, mm-hmm. I believe, telling on her boss or whatever it may mm-hmm. have been. But yeah, I was shocked, and I did like the fact that she was so impressed with the emojis. I also, you know, this is probably totally off topic, but I like her, I wouldn't say accent, just the way she talks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she kind of has like that little urban twist to it, but then she's able to kind of switch it up at times and you know, with her lingo. I like that character. But yeah, she stinks like the FBI and everyone's mm-hmm. out to get them. But you're correct. I mean, I couldn't believe how strong she was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she knocked that guy off of Alex and just, you know, kicked him into mm-hmm. the ground. But I'm curious as to why she appears to be so loyal to Alex when Alex is never really, like, she's always so friendly with Alex, and Alex mm-hmm. is never really, I don't believe, like, has let her in. Do you think?
I think she's the only one, kind of like with Crazy Eyes with her friends, she's, like, the only one that's really ever listens to her talk about. Because, I mean, she's the only one we've seen talk to her about, because Alex, something happened last season where Alex attacked her, she attacked Alex in the shower, and she thought, and then Alex understands, and then she, I think, intermittently speaks with her about her delusions.
And I think she and Piper were either on the plane together.
When
they were transported mm-hmm. to the prison, but they haven't really gelled or clicked.
No, they know each other, but yeah. But she, and I, so maybe that's why she kind of bonds with Alex, because a lot of times people don't want to listen to paranoid schizophrenic rant about what they have to say, because, you know, it's not necessarily the truth, or it's hard to listen to because they repeat things, and it's hard to, there's a lot of fear associated with people with schizophrenia because we don't totally understand it, and, you know, sometimes they can get violent, like Lolly got really violent, she killed a guy, well, she didn't totally kill him, but she, you know, she thought she killed
him. Those were her intentions.
And those were her intentions, and so it's, you know, it's kind of hard to understand, but a lot of times they just want someone to treat them like a human being instead of like someone with a severe mental health disorder. So I think that's probably why Lolly and Alex.
Possibly. I only asked that because, I mean, you know, all the ladies were running to the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for her to kind of see that, take a time out mm-hmm. to go get Alex. I've got to go let Alex mm-hmm. know first and go all the way over to the, was in the garden building to let Alex know. You know, that just shows that she's, you know, has some strong feelings for her and cares about her.
And thank goodness she did, because
thank goodness.
She's alive.
Yes, she saved her life.
Yeah. And then later on in the episode, they go back to bury it, and Frida, the octopus tattoo lady,
She's gangster with an A.
Yes, yeah, she is gangster with an A. She's definitely hardcore. And she doesn't tell everyone she's hardcore all the time
either. Does not.
She just looks hardcore. And she's already there, and she's got a plan. She knows what to do, and she kind of just does it. And then at the end, she wants to go have lunch.
Yep. And took those keys as well, though.
Mm-hmm. As a what was it, like a present or something for her help. But she knew exactly how to get rid of that body, and
she sure
did. It
was
a little disturbing. Even though I like Frida, but we've never really seen her do anything to anyone that we like.
Well, I was shocked that she really had no affect throughout the mm-hmm. entire process. And neither did the other woman with mm-hmm. the glasses. You know,
yeah.
I saw her, like, she scrounged a few times or scowled her face when she was, you know, when they were doing different things.
Gross.
But overall, I mean, they, like you said, they just went through the motions mm-hmm. as if it was just, as if they were planting seeds,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
It appeared, though, that Alex struggled a little more with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was because she personally knew him
mm-hmm.
Or it's just the fact of her chopping up a body and never, you know, she had indicated at one point that she had never killed anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was really affecting her.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I mean, Alex definitely, she contributed to, you know, the substance abuse epidemic. So she did do things that were pretty horrible, but she never killed anyone.
Right.
So, And that's a tough thing to do. I feel like most of the ladies on the show have never... We don't really see death a lot on the show.
No.
We see, you know, we see people go to Max or go to Shoe or get released or, you know, whatever. But we don't really see people die very often, which I don't... I would hope doesn't really happen too often in federal prisons. Right. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't... I think maybe, you know, years ago, but I haven't heard much of that occurring too much nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know.
Someone said if this was Oz, we'd have, like, a whole new cast. Like, I never saw Oz.
Yeah, they'd wipe them out.
They'd just, like, kill them all the time. But they were in, like, a maximum security male men's prison
or something.
Yeah,
they were.
So it's very different.
And it was a lot more, I think, a lot more violent. Like, a lot of those guys in there, unlike Orange is the New Black, were in there for violent crimes.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, maximum security, right? Isn't that most
It's usually the case. In, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of gangs, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, Orange is the New Black definitely has their share of cliques, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of it seems to be based on, like, ethnicity. But, you know, you definitely can see how they certain folks stick together.
Mm-hmm.
And try to look out for each other in, mm-hmm. in the prison.
And even though it's based on, I guess that's how it goes in prisons. I'm not sure. I only know from Orange is the New Black, but they seem to be okay with it. They seem to just kind of, but then they hold each other up and support each other because they don't find that anywhere else.
Right. They definitely do. A lot of the prisons are like that. And, you know, years ago, a big reason for the gangs formulating were to kind of protect themselves not only on the streets but in prison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were a great deal of not only even race wars, just politics in the prison system. And folks oftentimes of the same ethnicity, but not always, would band together
mm-hmm.
to make sure that they weren't taken advantage of and that they were able to survive in prison.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that you do out here. You run the gang unit, right?
That is
for
correct.
For the juvenile probation, which is tough because they're so young. And
they are.
You know?
They are extremely mm-hmm. young. You know, the gangs nowadays are totally different from how they were even back in, as early as the, you know, late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it was a lot more for, you know, selling drugs, making money, things of that nature. And they were a tremendously more organized, even though I'm not, you know, advocating for it at all. But they were. There were hierarchies, and they had a pecking order. And, you know, there were certain things you couldn't do without getting approval from the you know, the heads of the gangs. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, it's extremely scary because there's a lot of teenagers. Mm-hmm. They running the gangs, and they're smaller sets, but I mean, when you've got a 15 or 16 year old who controls 20 to 30 guys, a lot of times they're not thinking about today, let alone the consequences tomorrow or, mm-hmm. or how that may affect certain things. So it gets really dangerous and scary.
Yeah, I don't think I could have been in control of 20 or 30 anything.
You know, you and I both.
Yeah,
you
know? I would be, yeah.
And when I say control, just basically, you know, they're the top dog, so to speak, mm-hmm. and they're able to kind of call the shots, but there's no real, it's just like mass hysteria. There's no real organization with it.
Right.
Which makes things a lot messier.
Mm-hmm. You know? But it comes from a place of just wanting to connect, right?
I agree. Kind of, yeah. I agree 100%. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, initially, a lot of the gangs will give kids at least, and adults, but that false sense of security and family. And, you know, we've got you to the end and we'll do anything for you and we're going to, you know, prosper together. When in actuality, a lot of them, when they do end up in prison, they find out that that was just all a front. Mm-hmm. And that no one's really there for them.
Right.
They were just kind of using you for whatever it was that your purpose was while you were out.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Man.
And so, you notice that in prison, even Orange is the New Black, you can see, you know, most of the folks who do have connections with people in the outside world, they usually don't have too much contact with too many. It's mm-hmm. usually like your immediate family, a brother for Piper, you know, and some mm-hmm. parents or a sister or a loved one. But folks usually... Mm-hmm. tend to go on with their lives, and you know, you're in there while time is passing.
Yeah, and I read somewhere, I probably have the link somewhere, but it was the federal prison system is really not good at keeping people connected with family because they put people all over the country. So I could be from Connecticut. I mean, Piper lucked out because she was from New York and she ended up in New York, but you could be from Connecticut and go to a jail in Missouri or wherever far away where people can't come visit you.
That is
and
correct.
And that's just, it's a shame because why, I mean, I understand it's probably overcrowding and figuring out where people go, but it's, you know, keeping people close to their family so that they can keep that connection is really important in making sure they get back out into society and thrive.
That is true. We've actually even had some clients in IOP who served a substantial amount of time in the federal system, and they shared how they were like in Indiana, you know, like you said, Mississippi. And another thing that oftentimes the federal prisons will do is you may say you have a 10-year prison sentence. You know, you may be in five different prisons throughout that, throughout the entire country. I was told, I don't know how true it is, and this is something I definitely would like to research, is that one of the big reasons why the federal system does that is because they don't want the inmates to get too connected and too comfortable in one spot. So they'll move them after a year or so, so that, you know, the organized crime doesn't get too, you know, sophisticated in the prison system, because a lot of these guys are heavy hitters.
You know? Right. And that sounds like, you know, it sounds logical, but at the same time, it's pretty inhumane
to
shuffle people around like that. But, I mean, there's a reason. I mean, I'm sure there's a reason they do it, but
this is a method to the madness.
Negatives, negatives with the positive, especially with females, with children and things like that. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, that's definitely something I would like to look into a little bit more. But
definitely.
But, you know, women definitely band together a little bit more than men do, I think, just in general. And they're more, you know, I don't know, more social creatures than men are, from what I know as a lady.
No, I agree.
And from what I know agree. Just in general, it's, you know, they do, and we kind of see that in the show. And at the end, too, where, you know, Frida didn't really have to help the women bury the body, but I think they all kind of did the right thing in the end. I don't know if TV is making me a more, you know, brutal person, but I feel like they did the right thing in the end.
Well, they bonded together, and you know, he definitely was trying to take her life. So, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, as much as they may not all hang out on a day-to-day basis, they came together for that common, you know, goal, and that was to keep Alex safe. That's correct. So,
all right. Well, I think we're good. Anything else?
No, not much. Other than just, I just want to thank you for inviting me. I didn't really know what to expect, but you know, if this has touched anyone in any way, and when I say that, just if it's gotten the wheels turning or has you thinking about kind of processing the show a little more, or if it's a listener who's never seen the show, I strongly encourage you to give it a chance, because it definitely does touch on a lot of real life situations, along with, if not anything else, it really has me appreciating some of the things that we do take for granted at times, such as our homes and our families and having the freedom to, you know, not have to ask permission to use the bathroom, you know. But other than that, thank you very much for having
me. Thank you. That's why we were such good IOP partners, because that's definitely how I feel about it too. So I hope that gets everyone thinking about stuff, and we'll have more episodes on the way. So thanks so much.
Thank you.